Ho, ho, ho. It's Christmas season time. And what better time than go visit sunsetlakesabadee.com and use the code LEFTISBEST to get 20% off. Why? Because these make great gifts, great stocking stuffers. These are the type of gifts you give to, like, your mother-in-law or to your uncle or something like that, or, you know, or to your friends, I guess you could do as well, because you're turning them on to something that they're really going to enjoy that may, I don't know, the lotion may help their dry skin, the rubs with arnica and sabadee may help their sore muscles, or maybe, you know, they're not willing to go down to that local dispensary, or maybe it's not, they can't. And you give them a little bit of sabadee with a little THC in those gummies, and they have a little bit of fun. All 20% off from a great company that has great farming practices. No pesticides in the growth of this sabadee. It's all third-party tested. You can see every single element that is in either your smokables or your gummies or your tinctures or your fudge, or your coffee. They also have great business practices. $20 minimum wage, mostly employee-owned company. They also are movement partners. They've donated tens of thousands of dollars to things like strike relief funds and Planned Parenthood and carceral reform and refugee resettlement. And they just gave $5,000 to the Vermont Food Bank, on and on. These guys are a great business. Great product. Check it out. Makes for a great gift for somebody that you care about. SunsetLakeSabadee.com. 20% off. Go check it out right now. I mean, now's the time for the show, too.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, December 9, 2025. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, David Dayan, executive editor of the American Prospect, co-host of the Organized Money podcast, on the affordability agenda. Also on the program today, Australia bans social media for kids under the age of 16. Meanwhile, after oral arguments, Republicans on the Supreme Court likely to overturn a 90-year-old unanimous decision on limiting presidential power. Speaking of presidential power, Trump passes the buck to Hegseth on the release of the September 2nd boat strike video. Incidentally, they destroyed the October 10th video.
That's things that innocent people do.
Of course. Trump's former personal attorney, Alina Habba, now former U.S. attorney from New Jersey. Jasmine Crocker enters the Texas Democratic Senate primary versus Tallarico. Colin Allred to drop out and switch to a congressional race. Washington Post reports Israel denying doctors entry into Gaza because they don't like it when the doctors come back out and talk about the absolute war crimes that have taken place there.
Same reason they've blocked journalists or killed them.
Honduras issues an arrest warrant for its former president and drug kingpin, who was just pardoned by Donald Trump. Trump announces $11 billion tariff relief, or I should say tariff relief bailout for farmers suffering at the hands of his tariffs. Federal judge blocks Trump's cancellation of wind energy permits. Politico reporting Brad Lander is going to declare his run against Dan Goldman, expecting a Mamdani endorsement.
Woo.
And the largest COVID-19 study ever shows vaccine lowers death from COVID by 74%. It drops all-cause mortality by 25%. And there is no increase in four-year mortality. That is a survey of tens of millions of people in France. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. That was a little bit abrupt, but it is
Newsday Tuesday.
Newsday Tuesday.
Hello, Sam.
Yep. Hello. And here we are.
Yep.
Emma, last night on CNN. I don't know if you saw that.
I witnessed it. You know, I floated outside my body and watched it. No, it was good. It was interesting. I haven't done CNN yet. It was my first appearance last night, so I'm a little bit tired because that show goes a little late. But
that show goes too late.
Yeah, but it was fun. I did the full hour, and I got to interact with Scott Jennings, which was interesting.
That sounds like a lot of
fun. And Neera Tanden.
And another bozo who I've never heard of.
I want to play a clip of something that you did on that show that I quite enjoyed and is definitely timely. There, the Democrats this week are going to get the vote that they were promised in signing off when Chuck Schumer caved on the Republicans' continuing resolution. And this is a sure-to-fail vote, but it'll put the Republicans on record as voting against the extension of the ACA subsidies. Here's Donald Trump trying to float what is maybe going to be offered by Republicans as a replacement, which is a $1,000 to $2,000 subsidy to Americans under, I think it is like 500% of poverty, $1,000 to $2,000 that they can put into an HSA, which is a health savings account that is available only now if you have a very high deductible insurance program. They're going to allow for more of those. This is a very good thing if you are 21 years old, are not on your parents' health insurance, and you are absolutely sure that you will not need any medical attention for years to come. But outside of that small cohort, it is a complete, it is a one-way ticket to more bankruptcies because of healthcare, people losing their health insurance, et cetera, et cetera. Here is Donald Trump.
I want to give the money to the people to buy their own health care. That's a good thing, not a bad thing. The Democrats don't want to do that. They want the insurance companies to continue to make a fortune. The Democrats are owned by the insurance companies. They want the insurance companies to get this trillions of dollars. We spent trillions of dollars goes to the insurance companies. I want that money to go to the people and let the people go out and buy their own health care. It works like magic. But you know who doesn't want it? The Democrats, because they're corrupt people, because they're totally owned and bought by the insurance company.
It's weird that this magic has been around. Incidentally, this is the second term for Donald Trump. They have yet to come up with any type of alternative plan for health care. This HSA thing is a scam. because it is they will pay the money. It's basically like putting it into a 529. It is good if you are it's going to be good for some people who are lucky enough that they will go through their life and never need any type of major medical help.
Yeah, it's the Democrats that are in the pocket of the health insurance companies. Many of them are, but not as much as the Republicans. It's insane to say that when you also, outside of the ACA subsidies piece, you kicked millions and millions of people off of Medicaid. That was also a part of what the Republicans did here. So it's an all-out assault on healthcare. It's not like this is something that the private health insurance companies are crying about here.
And Trump's populism is really thin. He's basically said previously, like, look, the health insurance companies, they're making too much money. They can still make a little bit of money, but we don't want to make them so much money.
I mean, the ACA is insufficient, but part of why these subsidies need to be extended, and this was not when that Gang of Eight Democrats caved, they did not get assurances on this front, is that people still need their health insurance. It's just like their premiums are going to double, and many people are just going to opt out of having health insurance altogether because they're not going to be able to afford it, and that means more of a
but
burden on our healthcare system. Yeah.
$1,500.
Right.
If they don't spend, will accrue on the stock market, assuming that just keeps going up.
Right. Anything to funnel more funds into the casino that is the stock market.
It's a twofer for them on that end. But all you'll need is one or two, like a broken arm, and all of a sudden that $1,500 out the window. Sorry. Here is Emma Vigeland on CNN last night.
She insisted we play.
Forced us to play.
I'm going to get so red.
She said no more eye contact with her.
I'm not going to be able to make eye contact with anyone for like a half hour. So I can watch these in private to critique myself, but that's because in private I can go like, stupid idiot.
We'll turn your mic down. Here is Emma Vigeland. And who is this guy you're sitting next to?
Oh, he was Tim. I forget his last name. I'm sorry. But he was a Republican strategist. I was on with Neera Tanden.
Speaker is absolutely.
This guy's the Republican strategist. I was Jeff Flake, a former senator, and Scott Jennings. So this is part of that.
This speaker has absolutely passed transformational legislation and is doing absolutely an amazing job on behalf of the American people. So these folks are entitled to their opinion, but the results that are coming out of this house tell a totally different story.
Pause it for 1 second. You could take that, what he just said. It was so general and vague. You could literally put that into any era at any time.
Yes.
It doesn't matter necessarily a Republican or a Democratic speaker. And in fact, you could actually put into a million contexts where it's not even referring to the Speaker of the House. It's just to a speaker at, let's say, a conference or something.
He's a talking skeleton.
It really is amazing.
Oh, like, yeah.
There's such thin gruel. They did pass this massive piece of legislation. And can anybody point to any Republican who is trumpeting
yep.
the benefits that we got from that legislation?
Right. It was a very odd, like, the defending Mike Johnson's honor seemed to be what the thrust of this. And, like, I don't care about that, obviously. But it just goes to show a lot of these people, if you're in a Republican circle, you're trying to maintain relationships. Yeah. And I just find it a little odd that that's at the forefront of news commentary.
Story.
I would say, yes, the legislation is transformational and taking millions and millions of people off of their health care. That is exactly what's going to happen.
But the ACA was supposed to fix that.
Wasn't the ACA supposed
to be the magic pill that fixed everything?
That's not my intention. I'm a believer in Medicare for all.
There's 45 million people with health care today because of the ACA.
ACA expanded coverage, but it did not solve everything. We need to have a single-payer system that can change that, and that's something that I advocate for on my show all the time. So I'm not going to to say that the ACA is a panacea, but the Republicans right now are not extending the 2021 ACA subsidies, meaning that people's premiums are going to maybe double, skyrocket because of the Republican Party right now. So, yeah, it's transformational legislation.
That's the Republican Party's
fault. Yes, it is. Yeah, you control Congress and you control the White House. So, of course, it's the Republican Party's fault.
Who wrote the sunset? Who wrote the sunset?
Let me finish my point, please. Let me finish my point, please. I want to go back to what Marjorie Taylor Greene said. I want to go back to what Marjorie Taylor Greene said about Mike Johnson and about the...
Okay, we moved the topic. But here's... I mean, this is their point about the sunset provision. And this is apparently something that they don't know in Republican circles. Everything sunsets. Everything sunsets. They're going to be voting on the National Defense Authorization Act, and they're going to be doing that in 2 or 3 days because it sunsets. They had the opportunity. And first off, none of them voted for the expansion of those subsidies in the first place.
Right.
Never mind the sunsetting. They didn't vote for it to happen in the first place.
Right.
During COVID. And so the idea that they're going to get that by blocking the vote to extend these subsidies, that they're not responsible for the sunsetting of it is absurd. And I think they know that.
Of course, of course. But the, you know, it's just a little bit of a game. It's, you know.
They've loved trying that point out since John Fetterman basically like stumbled into granting it to them during the shutdown.
And I also just think in these formats too, not to get too meta about it, but it is interesting when you're not just defensive of a Democratic policy and you acknowledge that there are improvements and you say something like a single payer healthcare system is the way forward. It's almost disarming because, as I was alluding to before, a lot of this are people jockeying and trying to toe a line or represent a perspective of that's more partisan. And so you can make a much more coherent point when you just are ideologically consistent as opposed to
Well, for that dude who's
partisan,
sitting on there.
Yeah.
He's on there so that he can go to other clients.
Yeah.
And he's got there's really two parts of his job. One part is to butter up Mike Johnson so that he can go and take his lobbying clients there. And then two is to get future clients by saying, look how chummy I am on CNN.
Exactly.
So,
you got to get in on that, Emma.
Good
thanks,
job, Emma.
Thanks, guys.
folks. You might not think, you may be thinking about, like, what are a thoughtful gift I can give to someone in my life? A gift that maybe encourage people to slow down, prioritize self-care. Those always stand out. With Nutrafol, you can give the gift of stronger and faster growing hair. It's an ideal gift for anybody who deserves a boost of confidence and science-backed support heading into the new year. I literally, when I got this copy, the first thing I was like, oh, shoot, I forgot to take my Nutrafol today. Hmm. But I take it every day. And I will tell you, when I started taking this about a year ago, maybe a little more. I can't remember. I have no sense of time. But I started feeling like I was thinning a little bit. And I have had great results. Nutrafol's number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand. It's trusted by over 1.5 million people. See thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months. This holiday season, Nutrafol is the perfect gift for people on your list. Your mom or your aunt, your dad, a new mom friend who has told you about hair shedding, also yourself or anyone looking to support their overall hair health. We both know women who have gotten really good results from this. It's probably not something you ever thought of as a gift. Frankly, I hadn't either. But they'll be thanking you later. Gifting something that someone actually needs is a thoughtful and impactful way to show you care this holiday season. Nutrafol makes it easy. It's thoughtful, practical, and meaningful. Give the gift of confidence this holiday season with Nutrafol, whether you're treating yourself or someone on your list. Visible, healthier, thicker hair is the gift that keeps on giving. Right now, Nutrafol offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription, plus free shipping. When you go to Nutrafol.com, use the promo code TMR10. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code TMR10, no spaces, for $10 off. We'll put the that info in the podcast and YouTube descriptions. Also, oh, this one. Okay. I'm not going to say these words. Santa's coal hole? No. They're only naughty words if you wipe.
Jesus.
Using a tushy bidet means you leave the bathroom so much cleaner than when you walked in. Let's get into it.
Let's.
Honestly, if you've never used a bidet, you really don't understand what life can be like. It makes so much sense. Once you've used the bidet, really only once, you will realize it.
The logic.
When your hands are dirty, you do not take a dry piece of paper and wipe your hands. What do you use?
Water.
Water. That's right, Emma. And that's what a bidet is all about.
In fourth grade?
Yes.
Very
tushy.
Good.
And here's the upside. Like I have a friend. I actually have two friends who have.
No, you don't.
I know two people whose bathrooms I've been in. And actually three, if I include Tim Pool. And Tim Pool had sort of the knockoff version. But these other two, they had like full-on imported Japanese toilets that do the whole thing. And they cost thousands of dollars. But Tushy is the everyday luxury bidet that instantly transforms your bathroom habits and bottom health for life. Tushy's elevated bidet collections nurtures your bottom with an instant warm water that never runs cold, a soothing heated seat, and UV sterilization for next level hygiene. All Tushy bidets easily attach to your existing toilet without the need for additional plumbing. Installation is simple and it takes about 10 minutes to complete. And it is a fraction of the cost of those imported Japanese toilets or whatever it is. Cleaning yourself after using the bathroom is now hands-free. Sit, cleanse, and dry using the built-in dryer. Instead of wiping endlessly with toilet paper, Tushy pristinely removes 99% of bacteria while protecting your natural skin barrier thanks to one natural ingredient. That's fresh water. Every Hello Tushy bidet comes with a 30-day hassle-free return and 12-month warranty. The Hello Tushy bidet is the perfect gift to indulge every personality on your list. Everybody goes to the bathroom. I mean, well, not everybody. I also had a friend who once had a pouch, but we don't need to get into that. Tushy bidet is a daily techie luxury that refreshingly practical, easy to use. I want to thank Tushy for sponsoring this episode. A-hole is only a dirty word if you wipe. For a limited time, our listeners get 10% off their first bidet order when you use the code TMR at checkout. That's 10% off your first bidet order at HelloTushy.com. Promo code TMR. I'm telling you, this is also a great gift. Giving a bidet is a great gift. But also, I got one more sponsor, and this is also a great gift. I mean, this would be a good combo, and that is Aura Frames. Aura Frames is a digital frame that, with an app, you can load pictures onto this frame. So you can give this to your parents, to your grandparents, to your aunts, your uncles, your kids, your cousins, your friends, whoever you want to stay in touch with. And it is a gift that will keep on giving because people love to see pictures of you and your family and your kids or whatever it is. And it's super easy. And the best part is you don't even need to have the frame in hand. You haven't bought your Christmas gifts yet? Right now you go online, you go to auraframes.com, A-U-R-A, frames.com. You can use the promo code MAJORITY. And you'll get $35 off of Aura's best-selling Carver Matte Frames, named number one by Wirecutter. And you can load up the pictures that you want to put on there, also video, unlimited amounts of them. You can load it up without ever even holding the box, seeing the box, or whatever. So when the gift arrives in at you, whoever you're giving it to, they plug it in. It connects to their Wi-Fi, and then bingo, bango, the pictures are right there. It's a great gift. I have had a lot of success in giving these gifts, giving these as a gift. That's auraframes.com. Promo code majority. Deal is exclusive to listeners. Frames sell out fast, so order yours now in time for the holidays. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. All of this will be in the podcast and YouTube descriptions. Quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to David Day, an executive editor of the American Prospect and co-host of the Organized Money podcast. And just a reminder, if you want the show free of commercials, you can get it by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Okay, quick break. We'll be right back with David Day. We are back, Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. What a welcome back to the program. David Dayen, executive editor of the American Prospect, co-host of the Organized Money podcast. David Dayen, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You guys are doing an affordability issue. Taking on the affordability issue. Tell us what type of stuff you're covering in that.
Yeah, so this is our latest print issue of The Prospect. I think affordability now has become a word that means nothing. Right? It can really serve as a justification for just about any policy that you already believe in. And so we had the idea of, instead of looking at it from the perspective of this is why X is this high, this is why Y is this high, this is why specific items have increased in price, or instead of saying, you know, Trump has raised prices and here's why, we wanted to look at the long-term drivers of affordability that we've seen over many years and that we are seeing coming into vogue in recent years. And we don't feel like you can actually get at the solutions to the cost of living unless you're looking at the right part of the problem. And so that was the goal behind this issue.
Well, let's talk. I mean, we can start with the energy. I mean, because that we've seen energy prices go up, and a lot of this is being driven by AI or what?
Actually, that we did something that you know, used utility prices and electricity rates as kind of an avatar, but that was really about regulatory capture. So we don't think that it has been well discussed that the way that electricity rates are set typically is that each state has a public utility commission that is supposed to act in the interest of ratepayers and only allow a minimal rate of return on the investments that are made in utility infrastructure and, you know, basically deliver costs at the lowest cost possible. Because, you know, I mean, we don't have 20 wires going into our houses, right? It's a monopoly, a sort of a natural monopoly. And so the only way, at least in the conception of the current system where 70% of America gets their electricity from an investor-owned utility, from a private company, the only way to keep that company in check, because obviously they have this extreme monopoly power, they're the only one who is sending power to your home, so they can raise the price at will, unless we have this process of these public utility commissions that are supposed to keep rates in check. However, the problem is that these public utility commissions have been captured, both in terms of literal capture, where lobbyists who used to work on the commission are lobbying for higher rate approvals for specific utilities, but also in the sort of mind share concept of capture, in that the economic models that are used to justify rate increases are ridiculous, and they are used in a way that maximizes the amounts of rate increase the an investor-owned utility can get. And it really is a problem on the investor-owned side. Studies have shown that private utilities ask for and receive much higher rate increases than publicly owned power companies.
Why wouldn't we just have publicly owned? I mean, if it's a natural monopoly,
right?
I imagine there may have been a time in the government's history where the government didn't have the money to invest in this, in the building of the infrastructure needed, although I'm skeptical, but let's just grant that. But that's certainly not now. And if the theory is that we know we need to regulate the rate increases and maintain a specific ceiling on profits, although it seems like the ceilings on profits don't really go, that's more theoretical than in practice. We could also say, like, okay, we're just going to buy this from you one time. We're going to build in whatever the profits that theoretically you're supposed to get, and we'll buy you out, and then we'll just have the government run it, because it seems like the government's having to do just about all of this anyways. We'll contract out to you maybe some of the work, and that's it.
I mean, all you have to do to look at the fact that this system isn't working is to look at the stock prices of these major private utilities. I mean, this is an industry that is supposed to have to go hat in hand to the government when it can increase its rates. And it's supposed to be allowed this rate increase under a very strict formula. So that is not the makings of a superstar stock. Right. I mean, that's not a company that's going to be earning wild profits.
Right. That's not, we don't have 100x potential on this. Right. Theoretically,
it's a tightly regulated utility. And yet you look at the stock rates of these private companies, and they are earning well in excess, many multiples in excess, their stock rate is higher than what their projected earnings would be. And what that shows is that this system of, okay, a private company can own the utility, but we're going to keep it in check with this public utility commission, it isn't working. It was set up, this kind of regulatory structure was set up by the investor-owned utilities themselves. I mean, that's originally when they started buying out public power companies. They said, "Oh, okay, well, you'll help keep us in check by putting in place this regulatory structure." And it's clearly not working. And so, yes, in that piece, we talk about many campaigns across the country that are attempting to essentially move these private companies back into the public sphere. And we've seen this in many areas of the country. Ann Arbor, Michigan is going to have a vote on this next year. Maine had a vote in, I believe, 2022 a vote which failed, I should say. And in other municipalities led by DSA's Power of the People program are attempting to unprivatize, I would say, these investor-owned utilities.
Is there an opportunity for the federal government to do this? I mean, because one of the problems is we don't have really a cohesive and maybe not even coherent national power grid. And it feels like we are going to need one, particularly if we're going to pursue energy sources that are renewable. And, you know, it would be nice to be able to, like, if we have a lot of wind in this part of the country and it can generate more electricity than we need, we can send some of that down to another part of the country.
Well, I really think these are the right questions to be asked. And, you know, it's one thing to sort of say, hey, electricity rates are going up and we need to freeze those rates for a temporary period of time, or we need to, you know, reduce the use of data centers. And maybe there's a good reason for that. It's better to look at, okay, why is this a problem? Like, why are these electricity rates going up? And what does it say about other facets of the economy where these instances of regulatory capture exist? And so instead of saying, here's what we need to do on electricity, I think the better question is to say, well, in areas where there is clearly a disconnect between the regulatory system and the reality, we need to dismantle that regulatory system and figure out another way to deliver this good or service. And it could be public provision. Certainly the Tennessee Valley Authority, which was established in the 1930s to electrify rural America, has operated in such a way as a public power generation system that has been very beneficial to the millions of customers that it serves. And we can look to that as a model going forward.
Where else do we see regulatory capture create sort of runaway prices or inaffordability?
Unaffordability?
Unaffordability,
I think it would be on. So, you know, certainly you look at the healthcare system. I mean, we have a regulatory structure that is woefully unequipped to deal with the large private interests that are dominating American healthcare. The Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services does little to no quality control on the various things that it oversees. So, you know, I mean, just go down the line. I think look at the Department of Education and how it's been unable to keep higher education costs down, even though it has tools to say that, okay, you're only going to be able to participate in the student loan system if you keep down your bloated administrative costs or whatever other cost bloat is in the system. I mean, I think that the failure of these regulatory structures calls into question why we should continue with them.
There's two dynamics, right? When we talk about these failures, one is like you said, with the Department of Education, it is a failure to use the sort of like to condition the carrots, right? Because it's a carrot to higher education institutions that the federal government is facilitating loans. So if we're going to do that, aside from like my issues with us profiting off of those loans, but essentially, if we're going to subsidize the universities in this way, we should get a return on that investment that we're making, which is you can't if you're spending too much on capital improvements because you want to have a nicer dining hall, we're no longer going. You're not going to be accredited under some, you know, accreditation rubric, affordability accreditation. You're not going to be available to participate in our loan program. That's the carrot side, right? And the stick side is supposedly, I guess, on the on something more like the electrical grid is where we're supposedly constraining what these companies are doing. But that seems like a sort of a snow job. I mean, it sort of just reminds me of the dynamic of like, we're going to buy your electric company, but you'll still get to constrain us is sort of like right. the debate I have with my son, where it's like, get me an iPhone and I promise you can limit my use of apps. Right. And then all of a sudden it's just like off to the races. Within 6 months, you're just like, I can't keep up.
Yeah. I mean, I think everything you need to know about the inadequacy of the regulatory system as it relates to electricity is in the fact that private equity firms are now moving headlong to buying utility companies. So in Minnesota, we saw BlackRock's infrastructure arm purchase Elite, which owns, it's sort of a consortium that owns several utilities in Minnesota and I believe also Wisconsin. We have a story coming tomorrow about Blackstone, the world's largest private equity firm, attempting to buy a public power company in New Mexico. There are smaller private equity firms that are trying to buy the biggest gas company in New Mexico. Private equity doesn't go into these things thinking, oh, these must be low margin businesses that, are tightly regulated by the federal government. That sounds like a good business for me to earn my oversized returns. I'm definitely going to go into there. They're going in because they know they can dominate this regulatory system and they can earn these outsized returns that their investors want.
Outside of the sort of either regulatory capture or just regulatory mm-hmm. failure, mm-hmm. What else would you say is the premier driver of unaffordability?
Well, we tackled it from a number of different angles. So we did a piece on middlemen that have been inserting themselves into various transactions in the economy, everywhere from real estate to healthcare in a big way. So example being pharmacy benefit managers, which sit in the middle of pharmacies, health plans, and drug companies, and as it turns out, take a bunch of profit off the top for themselves and make drug prices higher. So that's an example, middlemen. We did another story on wages. I mean, low wages is right. One of the reasons why people can't afford everything. There was a great Rand Institute study that showed that wages as a share of national income have gone significantly down over the last 50 years. And if they stayed at the level they were at 50 years ago, the American people, the American worker would have $79 trillion more dollars than they did under the current circumstances. And that includes $3 trillion just in the last year studied, which I believe was 2023, $3.9 trillion more, just if wages stayed at the level they were at in 1975.
I want to make this a little bit more explicit for people so they understand. That is, when we talk about wealth inequality, that's what we're talking about, because the economy is still generating this wealth. It's just a question of how it's being distributed.
Right.
And in 1975, it was distributed far more broadly. When the economy made $100, 95 of it right. went to the people, and $5 maybe went to the top 5% or 10%, the top 1%.
Sometimes we talk about this in terms of the wage productivity gap. So productivity is sort of a measure of how much the economy is producing at any one time, and for decades, that tracked right along with wages in a very tight separation between one another. And that started to break off in the late 1970s. And ever since, productivity has kind of soared while wages have stagnated. And that leads to this huge gap that we're talking about.
We got this gap right here. And I think... But again, it's important. Somebody got that money, right? The delta between the light blue line and the dark blue line, mm-hmm. The light blue line is wages. The dark blue line is the amount of money that's being generated. Somebody got that money. It just wasn't workers.
Wasn't you. It wasn't me. And that actually leads to what I think is one of the most interesting pieces that's in the series. And it's about how inequality drives unaffordability. So you say that, somebody got that money. And those people that got that money are spending it at higher rates and at more pronounced rates than the people who don't have barely enough money to, gain basic necessities. Sometimes what this is called is a plutonomy, which is kind of a portmanteau of plutocracy and economy. That was something that was coined 20 years ago by Bank of America in a research note. And they advised companies, well, look, the rich are doing all the spending, so you should cater, you should target your prices, and you should target the services that you provide to the rich. And we have seen studies since, more recently, that say that the top 10% of income earners are doing up to 50% of the consumer spending. And so this leads to a concept in marketing called premiumization. So instead of a hairdryer costing $15, there's a premium Dyson hairdryer that it comes in different colors and apparently dries your hair better, I guess. And
I've heard about this thing.
It costs much, much, much more than just a basic hairdryer. And the problem is that the rest of us who aren't rich aren't immune to those marketing considerations. And so we see the same ads. We feel, this same premiumization that goes on in the economy. And it interacts with social media in a way where, influencers and people who are trying to sell products like that, they present kind of a depiction of the economy where you deserve the finer things in life. And ultimately, this ends up raising prices where we're paying more for things that we're told are premium, whether they are or not. We're told that they are premium products, and whereas we would have settled for something different years ago.
And isn't there also a dynamic, though, that in the market, I mean, it doesn't, obviously, maybe not so much in the hairdryer market, although I would imagine, look, if I have a store and I have one product that is going to make me a 20% markup, the premium hairdryer, I'm going to give that shelf space. So I'm going to limit the options for ones that may be less. They may not serve the same purposes for others.
It might be the only thing you sell. Right?
And it might be the only thing I sell, because I'm paying the people to stock it.
Why bother with a discount good if most of the spending is happening at the very top? And so that limits access to other people. And this interacts as well. This is a really great, really complex piece by Emma Jansen. This interacts as well with the access to cheap credit that we have. So we have kind of this FOMO economy, right? Where you see all these experiences and you feel like, hey, I work for a living. I want to be able to experience, some of these finer things. And the way I can do it is because there's a buy now, pay later thing that tells you, oh, don't worry, you can buy that in several installments and you can pay it off over time and you don't have to worry about it. You can get what you want. You can get the things that you deserve right now. And you put this all together, this access to cheap credit, this premiumization, and then this sort of social media marketing and this FOMO economy, and it ends up raising prices over time. And constraining the cost of living.
And doesn't it do that also, I would imagine, in areas with the real estate market? Because if you have somebody who's coming in, I'm going to compete against this other person to buy this house or rent this apartment, and there's just basically a race to the top, and then you can fill... It creates this sort of like a vacuum. You can slowly creep up. I mean, it seems like it creates upward pressure on prices.
Yeah, I think that is the case. And then that interacts with the piece that I actually did for this issue, which was about technology as a driver of this affordability crisis. And companies have gotten much more sophisticated about individual personal desires, personal needs, your shopping patterns, when you buy things, why you buy things, and they are exploiting that through the use of big data, through the use of machine learning, through the use of AI. We had a piece that just came out. I wasn't involved with this, but Groundwork Collaborative, which we've partnered with in the past, just did a story today that was also in the New York Times and dealt with, I think Consumer Reports was involved, where they got 20 people to shop for the exact same goods at the exact same time from the exact same location on Instacart, and the prices varied by up to 20%.
Wow.
Personal characteristics, or even not personal characteristics, and just a bunch of testing is done, millions of changes, little changes in prices to test what does well and what doesn't, and how we can maximize that willingness to pay. This level of pricing is not just about supply and demand anymore. It's become very, very sophisticated, and they're not doing it so they can offer discounts to everybody. They are doing it so that they can maximize and exploit the amount of earnings that they can get off every single good that they sell.
The other thing, I just want to turn back to one moment about the sort of the inequality and mm-hmm. and how it drives prices up. But also, do you think that this is why there has been a real inability to assess how the American public is experiencing the economy? So, for instance, you know, we just Black Friday, record number of dollars spent,
right?
Not record number of goods bought. And if we know, if we apply what we know about the top 10% buying 50% of the stuff,
yeah.
It suggests that, like, we look at these top line economic numbers that have always, you know, we've always relied on to get a sense of how the economy is doing, but it's really only telling us how the economy is for a very narrow band of Americans, that the rest of Americans are sort of left out of the economy in many respects.
I sometimes call this the tyranny of aggregates. So we, and this has been, you know, how many presidencies in a row have been taken down by this, where they say, look at the aggregate economy, consumer spending's good, unemployment's low, et cetera, et cetera. And yet a large majority of people, or a large segment of people, feel like they're not getting ahead. And when you aggregate the economy, you know, the old joke is that if there are three people in a room,
right,
and two of them don't have any money and the other is Bill Gates, the aggregate of that room is very well off, but it neglects, you know, the individual circumstances that are involved. So I think that we have a problem with this often, and it does tend to mask what is actually happening to certain groups of people.
How do we fix that? I mean, how do we fix now? I mean, like, how do we fix that specific dilemma? Because, I mean, I remember, and you know, back when there was going to be a peace dividend, when Bill Clinton came in back in like 92, 93, you could read a bunch of think pieces about how we were going to recalculate. I think they called it the GNP then, mm-hmm. not GDP. Mm-hmm. How we're going to recalculate the GNP to include the opportunity costs that may be associated with economic activity, or the externalized costs that might be associated with economic activity. Somebody breaks into my apartment and steals my TV and busts my door. The GNP goes up at that time, but there's no accounting for the fact that, like, maybe my productivity goes down because I'm going to miss a day of work, or
right,
maybe I am just bummed out, and or maybe we, you know, to replace the wood table that got busted, we got to cut down another tree, and it adds to global warming or whatnot. Like, and that went by the wayside. Is there even a movement now to look at other economic indicators that give us a better sense of, oh, wait a second. 70% of the population is sort of suffering here, as opposed to it looking like everything's rosy.
I mean, I think there are a lot of ways to measure an economy. You can look at distributional analysis instead of just, you know, is the line going up? You can look at what different deciles, what is happening to the bottom 10%, what's happening to the bottom 50%, what's happening to the bottom 90%. A lot of that information is there. Like, we measure it. Like, I wouldn't have that statistic for you about the top 10% doing 50% of the spending if that information wasn't available. The question is, how is it presented? And so, you know, I think every, from a political standpoint, every administration is going to try to present that information in the best light for them. But it is incumbent upon the rest of the media and commentators.
Well, the media is not going to do it. The media is not going to do it because they're all like they're completely incentivized to do the opposite.
I just told you about it.
Well, no, but I'm saying the mass commercial media. I mean, with all due respect to you and to me, you know, like we're going to turn on cable news. They're not going to be talking about it very much because that's just not the business they're in. Certainly not going to happen on the business channels. It seems to me that there has to be, we need to hear about it either more from politicians or there needs to be, I don't know, think tanks, but I don't know who's going to start that think tank.
How many times does this disconnect have to happen before the political system writ broadly, and I'm talking not just about politicians and think tanks and policymakers, but also media, I think, gets put into that equation. How many times do we have to have this conversation? How many presidencies can be taken down by this disconnect between aggregate statistics and the realities for large segments of people on the ground? How many times does this have to happen before things change? So they can continue to operate along the same lines that they always have. And the public will continue to be angry and they'll ping pong back and forth between the parties and throw everybody out every couple years. You know, if you want a durable majority, you need to speak to those needs in the ways that I think the more successful candidates this year did.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it seems like maybe we're sliding into a different era, but I still remember like the sort of the major talking point about our healthcare system was princes and kings come here to get their surgery. And like that, you know, like that's, we got the best in the world. That's why princes and kings come from everywhere. But it, you know, like maybe it's starting to occur to people that like only princes and kings can really afford the good healthcare and everybody else gets screwed is not necessarily the flex you think it is.
Right. I agree. I mean, I'm trying to think of the other big piece that we had in the issue looks at a topic that is woefully, I think, neglected in the course of all of this in terms of a long-term driver of affordability problems, and that's climate change. We have stopped thinking in the terms of the cost of inaction. But it's not just extreme weather patterns that knock out infrastructure and that then has to be rebuilt, but it's changing weather patterns that change the nature of crop yields, for example. I mean, one of the things we're talking about the most in terms of affordability is groceries, right? Well, you know, coffee prices were at an all-time high before the tariffs.
Yep.
And they were that way because of the changes in where you can actually grow coffee, which is migrating away from the traditional growing regions. The expansion of pathogens in a hotter climate environment has been a major factor in cattle, thinning of cattle herds. It's been a major factor in wiping out a lot of the orange groves in Florida. And a number of other problems. Literally, you look like every week, there is some different pathogen, whether it's bird flu or there's some different because of a drought or because of an extreme weather pattern or flooding. There's some wipeout of crops somewhere around the world that produces 50%, 70% of the world's product of that particular good. We don't talk about this at all. And yet it is a definite factor in the increasing lack of affordability of groceries.
I want to turn to what's going on with Netflix, but I just got a question. Steve Austin asks, Sam, please ask David Dayan where one could pick up a copy of the December affordability issue if they currently don't have a subscription just yet.
That would be at prospect.org/donate or /subscribe. And you go there and you'll get all of our issues. We put out 6 a year. And we usually throw that in with a monthly donation. So it's prospect.org.
You can get the archives, right? I mean, you can access
the
archives.
Back issues. You can access whatever we got. Yeah.
All right. Let's turn to the Netflix, Warner Brothers, Paramount deal that's happening. You and I met in show business. I don't know if you remember.
I wouldn't call it that, but okay.
A student film.
It was more show than business.
It wasn't so much business, but it was definitely, it wasn't even that much show. But be that as it may, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, outside of, this is more media consolidation. People don't seem to be as worried about it because it doesn't necessarily involve news. But, I mean, come on. This is
I mean, theaters
nuts.
Could completely close around the country. I don't know.
Yeah. These are, I mean, if you're talking about Netflix or whether you're talking about Paramount, these are both illegal mergers. And this real kind of poverty of imagination has led people to believe they have to choose between one of them or the other. That
Paramount is horrible because we got a full-on right winger who's literally using his money to dictate, like, is installed Barry Weiss into CBS.
Right.
They just hired a promoted Tony Dokupol, by the way, the guy that said the thing about Ta-Nehisi Coates and the backpack of a terrorist.
But, you know, she's like interviewing Erica Kirk on a town hall type of situation. I mean, that is, and so people are like, I'm glad it's not Paramount, but even still, I mean.
I mean, the two things, it's not like there's this binary setup. There's this sort of conceit that there is, because the idea is that, oh, the Trump administration is going to put their thumb on the scale for Paramount over Netflix, and we're going to have to endure all of this. And that's really just a very improper and incomplete way of looking at this. Now, we can talk about why these deals both have very similar impacts, both on consumers and on producers and talent in Hollywood. So Netflix is the number one streaming company in the world. HBO Max, which is part of Warner Brothers, is the number four company in the world. Number three is some Indian streamer that isn't available in the United States. So you're talking about number one and number three combining. And we have seen Netflix, I believe, has raised prices on its streaming product over the last 5 years by about 120%. So if you liked that, expect more of it if they're combining the number one and number three streamers in the United States.
It would be insane to think that they are not that this is going to in any way expand offerings to us, right? I mean,
they claim that they're going to keep HBO Max going, but in the very next sentence of the announcement, they say, and Netflix subscribers will get the benefit of all of the library of HBO and Warner Brothers material. So why
I'm going to definitely have both services. Right, I'm going to definitely pay for both services. Why wouldn't I?
It's insane. And not only that, but as Emma correctly said, if you know, Netflix is famous for limiting theatrical windows, for bringing things directly to streaming. That lack of offering at the box office has already, we've seen in this consolidation era, had a definitive impact on how many screens basically are financially viable. When Disney bought Fox assets, We already saw this sort of take place. And it's very likely, whether it's Paramount and Warner Brothers combining one studio, or whether it's Netflix and Warner Brothers and Netflix given their past history, influencing the theatrical windows, you're going to see, potentially the death of movie theaters in the United States.
This was predicted, the death of movie theaters were predicted when VHS tapes came out. And it's not because we're talking about an introduction of a new technology. We're talking about an inability to actually get movies to fill those theaters.
Movies, right? So if Netflix does, and Warner Brothers, if Netflix and Warner Brothers are the same company, it is highly unlikely that the same amount of movies will be made out of Netflix and Warner Brothers. It just is. And the same thing goes for if Netflix and Warner Brothers and Paramount are the same company. It's just very unlikely that you would see the same amount of output. And if there's a limit to the number of films, particularly the number of films that people are going to want to see, which is already a problem in the U.S., that's going to have a material impact on theater owners. That's why theater owners have opposed this deal. The other people that have opposed this deal are everyone who works in Hollywood, the Writers Guild, the Directors Guild, the Screen Actors Guild. And that's because if you're taking, you have a project, whether it's a film or a television series, and you have a number of bidders for that project. If there are fewer bidders, if Netflix and Warner Brothers were two of the bidders and now they're one, you're not going to get as much money for that product. So
not going to be as much production, period, because why would one entity make as much product?
Competing with themselves.
Exactly.
I wanted to ask just really quickly, though. I mean, first of all, Netflix, I think they do 7-day theatrical releases in terms of like the awards consideration. And that I would imagine they're going to lobby to basically have that be nothing. So that
promising that they would do the same theatrical windows at Warner Brothers that they are currently, but I don't know why we should believe that.
Why would we believe them? I mean, so that's going to really harm movie theaters. But even like when we back up to just how this even got going, you have the Ellison Nepo baby that is in charge of Skydance and was across this merger with CBS, who just was like bloviating and just was like, I'm going to acquire Warner Brothers. That got Netflix into the bidding war, and they were like, hey, we have a better offer. And now they're coming back, Skydance, Paramount, with another offer with Jared Kushner in tow.
Right.
He's helping finance it.
To be clear, the Paramount tender offer they've made for this hostile bid is the same offer that they made at the end of the process that Warner Brothers board rejected. They're basically saying, okay, the board rejected it. We'll take it to the shareholders and we'll let the shareholders decide. And it isn't only Jared Kushner's involvement here, but Paramount a couple months ago hired Maken Delrahim, who is the in the first Trump term, was the head of their antitrust division of the Justice Department. So there were a number of sort of MAGA world figures that were involved with Paramount. And Paramount's entire strategy has been, we're the ones that can get Trump to sign off on this, and nobody else can.
Right.
And so that was sort of their ace in the hole. The problem with that, and the problem with this whole binary that gets set up, like, oh, I'm relieved that Netflix is going to buy Warner Brothers and not, you know, I'm relieved that this one illegal merger and not this other illegal merger, is that state attorneys general have the authority to use the Clayton Act, use the Sherman Act to challenge mergers. And it's very clear to me that they will in this case, no matter who tries to buy Warner Brothers Discovery. Rob Bonte is the Attorney General of California. He has been talking about maybe running for governor of California. His an entire ecosystem in Hollywood is against this deal. Why would he not? And they'd be against the Paramount deal as well, because it's the same dynamics. why would he not challenge this merger in court, especially when there are ample precedents? I mean, this looks a lot like the merger that was proposed between Simon & Schuster and Random House Penguin a few years ago during the Biden administration. And the Biden administration challenged that, saying that authors would get smaller advances if there are fewer bidders in the marketplace, the exact same dynamic as Hollywood talent getting fewer bidders in the marketplace and getting lower amounts for their productions. And they won that case pretty resoundingly in court. And that precedent can be used by any attorney general where Netflix and HBO Max is played. So any attorney general in the United States can use that precedent and say, this is the same kind of thing. It's going to create a monopoly or towards a monopoly in streaming or in studio production, and we're going to challenge it. And it doesn't matter what the Trump administration does. This is at the state level. It doesn't matter that the Trump administration may put its thumb on the scale. We don't have to accept the best that the Trump administration will give us in this case. And I think that's a very important mindset to get out of, because I'm seeing a lot of commentary of people like, well, we can't let it go to the Ellisons because that'll be MAGA Inc. That is this binary that gets set up that we have to choose the lesser of two evils is untrue. Warner Brothers is a very successful business. It is the number one box office winner this year. If you saw the Golden Globe nominations yesterday, the two big films in that were Sinners and One Battle After Another, both from Warner Brothers. There is no reason why this business can't be managed successfully by independently, and any attempt by another company that's a competitor to merge with it is presumptively illegal.
I understand that, right? And I'm hopeful that what you're saying, it wins the day in court. But is there something to what we're seeing right now, this overall dynamic where it seems like under Biden, of course, we've talked at length about greedflation and these companies getting away with taking home these record returns with higher prices. And then you add Lina Khan and more aggressive actual antitrust enforcement. There was major pushback against her. Then we have Trump. And it feels like all of these companies are racing, understanding the illegality of their actions, to get this in right now in case of, in 2028, a Democrat coming in and tripling down on this strategy. And I don't really see many reasons for them to be dissuaded, because the administration is on board.
They 100% are. And that's why we have to be loud about this. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of California elected officials outside of Ro Khanna talk about why this Netflix merger is bad and it's an illegal merger. And that is a form of cowardice. Democrats who are in control of attorney generals, offices all over the country have...
I mean, theoretically, we could have a suit where there's 15 attorney generals joining into this suit.
There is definitely a merger rush happening right now. Wall Street is very happy with how they can basically engage in pay-to-play corruption and get whatever they want out of this administration. And in a lot of the smaller cases, they probably will be able to do that. I mean, state attorneys general are constrained to a certain degree by the bandwidth that they have. They aren't the U.S. Justice Department. They can't challenge every case. But this one is very high profile, and it affects hundreds of millions of people in the United States who are subscribers to HBO Max or subscribers to Netflix. And some of these you're not going to get past the goalie. If state attorneys generals think they can, you know, sort of keep their powder dry and hope for the best from the Trump administration on this, they are sadly, sadly mistaken, and they need to get involved in the game here.
That would be impressive if someone was that completely oblivious as to what's going on. All right, last question on this.
Yeah.
What Netflix is talking about is buying the largely like the non-cable side, I guess.
Right. Yes. Yeah. They want
the streaming services.
Warner Brothers
more.
Studios, HBO, and HBO Max, and then the cable companies would be separated off much like what Comcast did with MSNBC.
Would those cable companies, so they theoretically be their own entity.
That would be spun off into a separate entity.
Yeah, whatever it's called, you know, like whatever. The choice.
It's, what is it, Versant? On your former employer at the MSNBC?
Yeah, who knows? But would that be subject to a potential hostile bid?
That's a spinoff. So, I mean, you know, they could kind of do whatever they want with it. But this is actually a larger question here, which is why would we be at all confident that a company made up of cable networks would survive in 2025?
Well, whatever Versant is, I don't think so. I mean, I can tell you that.
No better on the Discovery Global Network side, which is, I believe, what it would be called.
Our partner, Kalshi, our Kalshi partner, has on the big board. He'll be scrolling along here. You can bet on how long MS Now is going to be around. There's a reason why they call it Now and not tomorrow.
If you watch cable in 2025, you won't know what year it is. There's nothing on there that's current. It's just a wasteland of reruns. And cable television is likely to go away. Built up in all of this is this real disruption in how we consume broadcasted information and entertainment. We are moving inexorably to streaming. The question is, who's going to dominate that space? Netflix is making their play. One of the things about this is that Netflix wins even if this gets mired and caught up in legal challenges, because for the next year and a half, there is going to be this question as to whether or not Netflix is going to be able to purchase Warner Brothers, HBO Max, its main competitor or one of its main competitors, or not. And so if you're a producer and you have two bids for your television show, and one is Netflix and the other is HBO Max, which one are you going to take?
You're going to go to Netflix, of course.
So, because the larger problem here, and I know you've thought about this a lot because it came up way back in the day when Al Franken was challenging the Comcast
Universal
merger.
Well, this is what I was going to say. This is the other thing. Is this Bill Clinton's fault, the Telecommunications Act of 96?
It's the fault of a couple things. It's the fault of the end of the Paramount decrees, which was actually during Trump's first term. It's what we're seeing is an end of the separation between production and distribution. Yeah, FinCEN and also the Paramount decrees. So the Paramount decrees in the 1940s said, if you're a theater owner, you can't also be the production company anymore. And that's how it was prior to the Paramount decrees. And the television equivalent of that is FinCEN, which is, that different production companies have to be involved with different television networks. And we're now moving towards a reality where Netflix owns its productions and therefore can dictate the prices that it pays for those productions. And it also has the distribution output. And so it can favor its own content. If this merger goes through, you won't see any Warner Brothers pictures on other streaming companies, right? Because they'll all be on Netflix.
Or in a theater, because that theater is also competing. Like, they're just like, why should we diminish what we can make on our streaming service?
We'll just keep it all for ourselves. And this is exactly what the Paramount decrees and these other structures were set up to stop, because it trended towards sort of a monopolization on, in this case, entertainment, but you can also see it related to information. And so if you're talking about what's the real answer here, it's not just this sort of uneasy status quo. So maybe there's, what if there's another buyer for Warner Brothers and it keeps it independent? We maintain this competition between Warner Brothers and Netflix and Paramount. That's not the full answer here. The full answer is to set up once again a separation, a structural separation between production and distribution in a way that preserves the ability for frontline talent to recoup the value that they produce. Nobody goes to movies for the executives. Nobody goes to movies to see who produced it.
Can we also just say that this is about literally a couple of guys? Zaslav is one of them. I've heard he's just a lunatic to work for, who have turned their companies into basically a cottage industry, in the sense that, like, our old-timey notion of, like, a corporation and a company man, and I'm doing this for the sake of the company and the future of the company and my workers and blah, blah. These are just guys who perceive these entire operations as a financial instrument, in the same way that they would buy a stock, and, you know, they don't have any emotional attachment to it. It's like,
I'll give you two things on that. David Zaslav stands to get a $500 million payday if the Netflix Warner Brothers merger goes through. So that's number one. What do you think he's rooting for? Number two, Warner Brothers would be an absolutely profitable company, especially if they shed their zombie cable networks and move those off to the side. But the only reason that it isn't, it has massive debt from all of these other failed mergers that it
did.
The merger with Time Warner that then failed, the merger with AT&T that then failed, the merger then with Discovery that is in the process of failing.
And when they spin off these cable companies, they give them the debt. You guys own the liabilities, right? That's what happens.
The only reason that this company is not as viable as it should be, with a lot of success, both at the HBO level and the Warner Brothers level, is this legacy debt from failed mergers. So the answer to that is to do another merger. It's just madness.
David Dayan, always a pleasure. Folks should head over if they get if you subscribe to The Prospect now, you get access to the archives. And so if you haven't seen this affordability,
even if you don't, you get access to the archive. I know I'm a bad marketer, but here's my point.
We don't have Zaslav's making $500 million and you're sitting here letting people off the hook for getting the archives.
Here's my point. We don't have paywalls. We think information should be free. And we think that the value that we produce needs to be accessible. And we ask our people who support us to help us keep that free. And so it's more of a fundamental kind of philosophy that we have, that we believe that this information, stories about ideas, politics, and power, should be available to everybody. And if you believe in that, if you think that that's an important value to you, then you can help support us and keep that a reality.
So you're a red diaper baby, essentially. Is that what's going on here? Full-on communism that is breaking out over there.
That's right. That's why we're the great stable organization that we are.
There you go. David Dayan, how many years has it been since you've been executive editor?
6.5.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy cow. It has been amazing what you've done with that magazine, and very
Prospect.org,
important.
And we're going to have a Netflix show too on Organized Money pretty soon, probably next week. So you can check that out as well. And Organized
Money.
I thought you were literally going to do a Netflix show.
No, that was coming out. We're going to do a show about Netflix.
Yeah. Can you imagine after all that?
That would be hilarious.
After all that.
After all that. Yeah. Netflix called us. They said, you guys are doing some fun stuff. No, we're going to do a show about the Netflix merger, venture merger.
I was very excited to watch you on Netflix, but maybe another time.
Can I still access the Peacock archives of you, by the way?
Oh. Dude, let me tell you something. You couldn't even see the show when we were on Peacock.
When it was on.
That was the problem. I tried to explain to them, you're not on the internet. We could talk for about another 20 minutes about how all of these entities spent billions with a B in setting up streaming plays without any clue as to what they were doing or where they were going to make money from it. And right. And it's why they pushed that writer's strike, because they need to get out of deals and they need to backfill all of this debt they had created. That's not even the internet. Like, it was just, don't get me started. David Dayen, we'll put a link, obviously, to prospect.org. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
See you later.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will have fun and go over more clips of Emma, because she's been so insistent.
Sounds
we play Emma, all the, Emma, like Emma. We're going to do the whole hour. We got to do the whole hour.
Let's just take it from the top.
We should include the part where I completely forgot Scott Jennings' name and called him Jeff, because Jeff Flake was sitting next to me.
That looks like a Jeff.
It was going into break, and then I was like, for a minute in the break, like, what is his name? What is his name? What is his name? And it's Scott Jennings, not Jeff Flake.
You know what? Honestly, that is a power move.
It really is. On
television and call somebody by their wrong name.
That's what my husband texted me. Totally. Accidental
call
power
him Edward.
Move.
Power move. Total. You just next
hey,
time, just call him Bill.
Yeah. Yeah.
As Kevin over there said, and just watch the look on his face. Like, what, Kevin? It's
it
Scott.
Would be hard for him to scowl any harder than he was already scowling
right.
before you got
he
his name wrong.
He could sprain his face.
He's mugging.
Folks, remember, it's your support that keeps this show keeping on. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show free of commercials, but you get access to the fun half and you can IM us.
Yes.
Also, justcoffee.coop. It's their end of the year sale. 30% off. You don't even need to use the coupon code majority, though it doesn't hurt for you to put it in there because I think they see that in their logs. But justcoffee.coop, they got all sorts of coffee. Now is the time for you to check it out. Store up. If you've never tried Just Coffee, now is the time to do it. This is the time of year. You get 30% off. If there's a different flavor you wanted to try, now is the time to do it. You get 30% off. If you've never had the Majority Report blend, now is the time to do it. Justcoffee.coop. The dot co-op is because it's a co-op. Matt.
Left Reckoning after the show today at 2:30 Eastern time. David Griscom and I are going to be talking about this Senate primary in Texas, where Colin Allred drops out and Jasmine Crockett jumps in, and Tallarico's still there, and none have really done a whole lot of substance yet. And we also talk about this Netflix / Paramount / Warner Brothers deal, where I suggest that maybe we should go back to copyright terms that allow us to like keep this stuff as assets indefinitely, because the whole reason we've kept expanding this copyright beyond like what it is in the Constitution, which is like a lot shorter than 75 years plus the age of the author, whatever it is now, is so like Mark Twain's family could have like not be poor.
Right.
And it wasn't so like the Saudis could buy like the Maltese Falcon. All this stuff, if it should either be property of like the unions and the people who produce it, or it should be public domain. It shouldn't be a plaything for these, you know, psycho billionaires. But check that out after the show today.
100%. PBD and J, Brad Lander to primary Dan Goldman. Yes, we headline that.
Yes.
Ah, oh, folks, come on. See you in the fun
Keep
half.
Up.
See you in the fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What?
What is that going on? It's nuts. Wait a second. Hold on for a second.
The Majority Report.
Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who?
Fun.
What is up, everyone?
Fun. Nomi Key.
You did it.
Fun.
Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon.
Fun. Brad. Adler, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But, dude, you want to smoke this... 7A?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is it safe?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go throw up.
You libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-35-501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less.
But let me say this. Poop.
You can call it satire. Sam goes with satire.
On top of it all, my favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. You gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye. We are back. Sam Cedar, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report.
Just getting more water.
She'll be right with us, ladies and gentlemen. Taco time for Bonzo. Someone please make fun again.
It's been pretty fun.
Uday and Kuse Lutnick. If you're a member, it's guaranteed that Sam will read every single one of your messages. That is not true. That abortion nurse. We love the MR coffee blend at our house, and my husband especially likes to ask me if he'd like a cup of Sam juice.
I don't like that.
I have a feeling that's not helpful.
I'm going home.
Brian just quit. all right, let's take a look at this. Listen, Donald Trump is teetering. I should also say that according to my Trump...
period calendar.
Period
monthly calendar.
Yes. Trump was supposed to be juiced yesterday. So... It looks like he's at the end of his run. He may be trying to push into...
this is what he looks like.
Look.
Price.
Listen. Never healthier. He looks like he just smeared his face in mustard.
Listen, we're all going to end up there. Some of us may look like this, you know, well after we're in the coffin. But here is Donald Trump. He is, you'll recall, last week, I think it was, he said, we'll release the tape of the double tap strike. This week, he's forgotten he said that, and he's gotten very, very testy about it. And partly because this is, I think, more of a distraction than he wants, and partly because Apparently, is this a black reporter?
Yes, and a woman. Shocked to find out that it is a black woman.
Oh. A black woman, so...
She does not appreciate being asked questions by a black female reporter.
As a reminder, over the past month or two, really since the Epstein debacle, he's been completely melting down at female reporters. You got Quiet Piggy... he called another female reporter ugly, did he not? Stupid. This one, but the fact that it's a black woman, we know that that triggers him very much.
I mean, his dad was arrested at a Klan rally.
Well, and also, but Trump got a consent decree from the DOJ back in the early 70s saying you can't not rent to black people.
What?
You need to, you can't. Like, make a decision to not rent to black people because they're black.
Mr. President, you said you would have no problem with releasing the full video of that strike on September 2nd off the coast of Venezuela. Secretary Hegseth now says...
You said that. I didn't say that. This is ABC fake news.
You said that you would have no problem releasing the full bit. Okay, well, Secretary Hegseth... No,
whatever Hegseth wants to do is okay with
me. He now says it's under review. Are you ordering the secretary to release that full video? Well,
whatever he decides is okay with me. So every boat we knock out of the water, every boat, we save 25,000 American lives. Oh my God. That was a boat loaded up with drugs.
Pause it for a second. I just want people to sit with this.
Knock out of the water?
That boat was the one that we're talking about specifically was not headed to the United States. It was headed to Suriname. And this is according to the admiral. It was headed to Suriname. And then any drugs that were going to be brought on that boat, assuming it was, in fact, what they thought it was, would have gone to Europe. But he's saying 25,000 Americans were able to live. That's fascinating. Incidentally, how many hundreds of thousands of Americans died because you were pretending that COVID wasn't real?
Yeah.
But go ahead.
We knock out of the water. Every boat, we save 25,000 American lives. That was a boat loaded up with drugs. I saw the video. They were trying to turn the boat back to where it could float. And we didn't want to see that because that boat was loaded up with drugs just like everything else. But every boat we shoot down, and I don't know if you know, we're 92 or 94% down in drugs coming in by the sea. And we're trying to find who are the 6% because I don't know, people aren't liking to drive boats right now loaded up with drugs. But every single, think of that, every single boat we shoot out, on average, we save 25,000 American lives. Do you feel okay about that, Court?
Keep us safe.
Okay. I know my man. What about you? Are you okay with that?
I'm totally fine with that. Are you committed to releasing the full video?
Didn't I just tell you that?
You said that it was
You're
up to Secretary Hegseth.
You're the most obnoxious reporter in the whole place. Let me just tell you, you are an obnoxious, a terrible reporter. And it's always the same thing with you. I told you, whatever Pete Hegseth wants to do is okay with me.
Wow. You know, it would be nice at one point if we see the other reporters go, excuse me, do you think it's appropriate to say that?
Just once.
Right? Exactly. I just say, like, shut up. Or, like, I mean, I wouldn't say that, but it's just.
Sir, you could easily do some sort of, like, how dare you? Brits know how to do this stuff. Like,
right.
And register.
It would also be nice if these reporters who now, I mean, there's a clear pattern, right? Like, the first time I could see, like, okay. But that assignment editor for that reporter should be able to say to their reporter, hey, we got your back if you want to respond.
Exactly.
Like that reporter should feel confident in being able to say, and I don't blame her for not, but I'm saying that her editor or this multi-million-dollar entity that she works for should be saying to their reporters, we're okay if the next question is there, sir, aren't you just as obnoxious? Or something to that effect. Like this ritual humiliation that our press is allowing Trump to get away with without any pushback. I think it's a little bit unhealthy for the country.
Yeah. I agree with you. The colleague should stand up for her for just like their own sake too, because like what's next?
I mean, preservation.
The New York Times is suing the Pentagon right now because of their insanely draconian anti-free speech requirements that they were asking of the media. But this is all a part of like the rot that Trump has engaged in. It's insane.
You recall, what was it now? A month or two ago when the ICE brought in Black Hawk helicopters, had agents scaling down from helicopters, apparently.
Yep.
Invaded a building in Chicago, ostensibly because it was infested with Trendaragua.
Trendaragua.
And they bust down doors, literally busted down a bunch of doors, tore the whole place up, took the black tenants, put them into one moving van, took the Latino residents, put that into another moving van, and then ultimately, weeks later, announced that none of the people that they arrested were Trendaragua. That they did not have to have this SWAT, assault on this building.
I think there may have been one, but I don't even think that then there was
a question. And I think ultimately that one was found not to be Trendaragua, exactly. But regardless.
I mean, they took children out of their beds and some of them were nude, okay, and and brought them outside and had them handcuffed.
And we were later told that ICE got the tip from the owner of the building. Well, at the time, we speculated that this was very much like the first Trendaragua scare that took place over the course of the summer, last summer.
In Colorado.
In Colorado, and where it was basically a landlord who didn't want his tenants to be organizing and calling for repairs in the building.
Right. And also, I think in this case of Chicago, wanting to offload the property because this owner had and stepping on the clip.
Perfect.
Okay. Thank
timing.
You.
Here is the tenants of that South Shore building, ABC 7 Chicago, reporting on the fact that that building is going to be shut down. Its occupants basically thrown out into the street.
A Cook County judge denied allowing tenants more time to move out of 7500 South Shore Drive. She called the building a fire trap for numerous safety issues. She says she's trying to protect the tenants by getting them out of a dangerous situation. Some residents tell us they don't have anywhere to go.
We are in an emergency situation. Some of us are still stuck in this building. Some of us have been stuck in this building. Friday is our last day.
Tenants of 7500 South Shore Drive have 4 days to move out. They are being evicted after weeks of legal action over dangerous conditions reported in the building. Some of those conditions allegedly left after federal agents raided the building in September. The Trump administration released a highly produced video of the incident.
It took a military invasion to get the city to pay attention. We did not cause this building to deteriorate, and yet we have to live with the consequences of it. We did not call ICE to raid this building, and yet me and my neighbors had to deal with those consequences.
A judge appointed a receiver last month to coordinate closing the building and relocating tenants. Today, the judge denied an extension for tenants to stay in the building beyond Friday, calling the building a fire trap. Some of the tenants formed a tenants union. All parties seem to agree the building is unlivable. But some tenants say finding another place mid-month, mid-winter, that's affordable has been difficult. And they say they haven't been getting the help promised.
people have been trying to get out of this building, right? It's not that people don't want to leave. It's not that people are dragging their feet. It's that it's hard.
I don't have anywhere to go. I'll be homeless Friday from where it stands now. I don't have anywhere to go.
Where are we going to go, America? We still trying to figure that out. It's a few days left.
Today, the judge also denied a motion asking for $7,500 for each resident to locate, saying tenants are being offered a fair amount to relocate based on their rent. Meantime, advocates for Southside Together are urging the tenants to take the money that's been offered to them, and they've set up a fund to try and assist remaining residents.
I mean, you're living in a place that everybody agrees is uninhabitable. Why wouldn't that rent amount be enough to move, go into a new place, first last month's rent, generally in places like this, security deposit. Now we're at three times rent, and then you pay your first month's rent.
It's there's been reporting in Chicago about the amount of distress calls that had been made to the city prior to the federal raid. Block Club Chicago is like a local paper there. Has done some good reporting on this. Basically showed that 500 calls to 311 were made about the building between October 1st, 2021 and October 1st, 2025, an average of one complaint every 3 days. That's higher than the average for the rest of the city by a long shot. And it appears that this landlord wanted to offload this building. So one of the ways you do that is neglect. You don't answer calls. You allow conditions to deteriorate. Another way that you can do this, if you want to accelerate the timeline, is have the federal Gestapo come in, break a bunch of windows, tear apart people's apartments, as they did. I mean, you see some of the footage. They destroyed people's apartments, like, let alone the human trauma for these children. They destroyed people's property with no recourse. And the landlord's happy in that instance. And now this is the final step, because the landlord wants to offload the property for their own financial interest, and the tenants get nothing.
I mean, the landlord is this person named Trinity Flood, a millionaire from Wisconsin, made their millions apparently in mobile homes, slumlord, in other words. And yeah, bought this property up for significantly higher than the previous purchase price, expecting it to just print money. And when that's not done, when that doesn't happen, it becomes a loser, because it turns out that you actually have to do something. You can't just like buy something and let the money roll in. You have to like maybe do repairs on the gas and electricity. When that becomes a problem, instead of doing that stuff and putting up some of your millions of dollars that you've made, you know, charging people to live in your trailer parks in Wisconsin, because you're not even there in this news story. Like, the all parties, well, where's Trinity Flood in that news story?
Right.
Not even asked. It's an absentee landlord, just states away. Well, get the government to come in. And of course, this was always what this anti-immigration shit was going to be. Donald Trump himself used undocumented Polish labor to remove asbestos from Trump Tower, his prize accomplishment 40 years ago. This is the system. This is what it's intended to do.
And it's just, you know, we're seeing how immigration enforcement is used as a disciplinary force in a variety of different contexts that protects wealthy people and just capitalists in general, property owners or business owners. Immigration enforcement is incredibly useful if your employees are raising hell about, say, conditions in the workplace. You can threaten to call ICE on them.
Do the work and then call ICE, and you don't have to pay for their...
Exactly. Wage theft is the number one form of theft in this country, and many of the victims of that are undocumented immigrants. And then in terms of the enforcement of, like, a landlord like this, a slumlord like this, or in Aurora, Colorado. In Aurora, Colorado, the slumlord in that instance was heavily connected with the Republican mayor, I believe, of Aurora, or one of the Republican officials in the area, and was working with them, it appeared, to basically oversee this raid, and so that they could do the same thing like what we're seeing in Chicago.
Let's go to the IMs. Ohio Dad, you start off the stream with ho, ho, ho. Are you surrendering in the war on Christmas this early? Well, it's called hiding behind enemy lines. Best of the morning to the MR crew, says Corporations Ate My Baby. Good luck with all the news. Emma, cook the haters. Sick sup economy. I could honestly listen about monopolies and antitrust stuff all day. It's really important stuff and should be at the top of the DNC's priorities to run on.
Hakeem Jeffries is concerned about what Maury can do for AI companies, so...
No sleep till Emma. Did Scott Jennings and Jeff Flake have to wear name tags so you could tell them apart?
No, I just, I was overstimulated and had a brain fart, could not remember Scott Jennings' name.
Did you see the interview Anna Kasparian on Bill Maher where she talks about birthing persons, how her former coworker and former friend were mean to her about it?
No, I didn't see that.
Saw it through the Vanguard, of course. Okay. It's the only way to watch that stuff.
Yeah,
through the Vanguard. Well, that's honestly like
I'm
whenever I see any of that stuff, it's because I've watched it on the Vanguard.
I saw that she did Club Random, but yeah, I didn't watch any of it or see what the Vanguard covered.
Yeah, so they butt heads on Palestine too. But yeah, found time to talk about the important issues.
Mark found a way to sexually harass her while being pro-Israel. That was the only part I saw.
Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, it seems like that's when you're in these right-wing circles, that guy threw the tampon at her, too. I mean, this is what...
These are
new friends.
Is that show still around?
Her
Talk? I mean, that's sort of a philosophical question
her
at
talk?
This point. It's still around, yeah.
Is that what the name of it was?
Her Take.
Talk? Her Take? Her Take.
Yeah. It's still around, but if a tree falls in the forest...
June Oliver, currently listening to my little one giggle at Ms. Rachel's Netflix show. If anyone has a problem with her, they've got a problem with me. Al Knipson, David Dayan, Edison Trust versus Ellison Trust, which is worse? And does history rhyme? Number 13, have y'all tried getting Jasmine Crockett on? We have not. Alex B. And we normal people talk to ourselves into buying premium products by saying, oh, it's expensive, but cost per use, it will last longer. Just dank. Four time, Sam, please show us your hands without bruises. I don't get it.
Trump bruises?
Oh, I see. Yeah. Krusty, no. I think
not getting that kind of proved that I
yeah,
am.
Yeah, I was going to say, like a form function. Krusty Gnome, did Pam Bondi say at some point enough drugs were seized to kill 200 million Americans? Am I tripping when I heard that? I wouldn't doubt it.
People should be outraged by that, sort of the frivolous deploying of the statistics, like every boat we will save 25,000 Americans. People actually die.
How many people are also going to die from just the rescission of Medicare?
Yeah.
I mean, excuse me, Medicaid, and for not extending these... subsidies.
I was it was in the break after we had a debate about this, but last night on CNN, I was debating with the guy Tim, I can't remember his last name, and Scott Jennings in the break about the drug boat killings, and like we were talking about this. I'm like, okay, so if they're bringing drugs to kill Americans, are you okay with executing the Sacklers in the town square? Because that's essentially what they're advocating for. And then, you know, Scott Jennings was getting upset with me and saying those are not illegal drugs. These are prescription drugs. And we were going back at it. And yeah.
Then why do they have to pay $7 billion?
Yeah, I could have said that, but I think we were coming back. It was interesting. That was the one debate that carried over into the break.
Yeah, it turns out what they did was illegal, at least under civil
law. Yeah, they pled guilty to federal criminal charges.
Yeah.
But no drones over their yachts.
Yeah.
But they're white and rich. So
yeah, so...
Was it illegal?
Yeah. They're philanthropists.
Let's check in with number five. Scott Besson was on, and he was giving us some of his the family history. Here is your Treasury Secretary, Scott Besson. Talking about his hard scrabble life that he has to divest from.
This is
nice
the farmer.
To get out of his overalls and put his suit on.
Mm.
since the agreement with the Chinese, they are going to buy 12.5 million metric tons. But Margaret, I'm involved in the agriculture industry. I run a soybean farm, and I can tell you.
You own one. You invest in it.
Sorry?
You own or invest in
it. And people in my family go out and work on it. I actually just divested it this week as part of my ethics agreement, so I'm out of that business. But I probably know more about any Treasury Secretary than about agriculture since the 1800s. And I can tell you.
From an investment perspective.
Yeah. Knowing more about agriculture than any Secretary of the Treasury since the 1800s, like, I wouldn't expect many of them to have.
Is he divesting because the farm is getting crushed because of these tariffs?
No, because his ethics agreement.
He
said it.
He's been in office for a year. Why has it taken him so long to divest?
He's been swimming in treasure for the last 6 months.
He's been out in the field.
Yeah, right. Can't you see his calloused hands and the corncob pipe that's in his pocket?
Planting the seeds by hand.
Green Acres is the place for me.
My family goes out and works it. Please. Like, come on.
I know.
Who in his family is going out and working for it? His parents?
And what are they doing?
Honestly, they should play this, like, Scott Bisson, like, play that up and play it in rural districts and areas where there are farms. I know that, like, you know, some of us, definitely not me, were fooled by the Ann Selzer poll in Iowa. you know, that did indicate that the Democrats could be stronger there than we anticipate. And I don't know, going hard about these tariffs and what the Trump administration has done, total disrespect to the farmers in this country, is a fruitful path forward if the Democrats are smart.
Well, we should also say that Trump just announced $11 billion bailout for farmers because of these tariffs, which is probably why he had to divest, because he didn't want. But his family's getting it. I mean, is his family getting it or not? Like, who's getting this bailout money?
All the soybean farmers in his family.
Kowalski from Nebraska. Scott Besson, one of the best farmhands I've ever had on my farm. I've never had anyone shovel more shit than him. I just don't understand why he uses his mouth.
Oh, my God.
Kowalski.
Whoa.
Get his ass.
All right, let's do this. There's... Look, this is a not safe for work clip, and we've been talking about how there's this right-wing crack-up, and again, I'm not like following this. It's too...
It's a civil war.
In many... It's like there's like almost like four different parties fighting in this war, though. I can't...
It's like Yemen.
Honestly, I can't follow it. I honestly cannot follow the various, like, sort of intricacies. The other day, Tim Pool had Milo Yiannopoulos on. Milo claimed on that show that Charlie Kirk was gay.
And everybody else.
In response to Candace Owens saying that Charlie Kirk was looking to get a divorce, I guess somehow implying that Erica Kirk was in some way happy that Charlie was taken out of the picture. Then Yiannopoulos went on to say that Benny Johnson was gay, and everybody knew that. George Santos was like, "Wait, aren't you afraid of getting sued?" And Yiannopoulos was like, "I don't get sued because I've got the facts." And then Benny Johnson on Twitter said, "I have to protect my family." And then Milo Yiannopoulos went into...
And said, "I look forward to discovery." And now things have gotten kind of quiet on Benny's end.
Benny's seemed to quiet down. But apparently somebody took a shot, according to Tim Pool, at his compound.
He's very sensitive about the compound.
It sounds, though, like... he has an idea of why they think they did it. It was because it had to do with all of this right-wing turmoil and about him, either like platforming people who are disagreeing with Candace Owens or disagreeing with Candace Owens or what. And then last night, I think this was last night or yesterday, Tim Pool just lost it.
Candace Owens is a fucking evil scumbag. She is a degenerate cunt.
Boop, boop.
She is burning everything down, and she's gloating and smiling while she does it. And you know what you fucking told me? She has no security. She doesn't fucking deal with the shit we have to deal with. She's a piece of shit. She's making everyone else suffer. And all of these fucking conservatives out there that send me these fucking messages have no fucking balls to call her out. More and more people have started doing it. They send me these fucking messages. Good for you, Tim. Good for you, Tim. I wasn't the first person to do it. I'm not going to take credit for that. But don't fucking DM me like I did something for you as you cower, as you fucking cower, scared that she'll put you on her thumbnail and claim you benefited from Charlie Kirk's assassination, which she's doing to me right fucking now.
Yeah, that was the...
I'm fucking done with these people.
She has security just not on the level of you.
Oh, yeah, the one fat guy you mentioned with no wall and no barrier in a suburban neighborhood with neighbors. Shouldn't give two fucking shits. No one's out for her. She's lying about all of this. You told me you went to her house and she's got a 4-foot wall and one fat guy. And she doesn't give a shit about her security. Meanwhile, I get bullets fired at my fucking property and I have to go live in the middle of nowhere. And I got fucking strangers coming up to my house in Maryland breaking in. I got people showing up and beating up the residents who are trying to live there. How the fuck am I even supposed to sell this property? It's all lies. It's all hypocrisy. And it is for the purpose of making money. And she does not live the way other people live. And she claims she liked Charlie. She loved Charlie. And she is burning everything down that he built. Because she is evil. She is evil. And I'll say it again. This conservative movement is fractured. It's fried. Whatever it is. Okay. Republicans are on track to lose the midterms. They were actually trending in the other direction until Charlie Kirk was murdered.
Yeah.
And this is the point.
Okay,
isn't it?
Pause it. Now, you see, this is where what interests me about this clip. It is simply not the case that Charlie Kirk's assassination hurt the Republican project. The Republicans were trending out. The big thing was the shutdown. I mean, you already saw a difference in the generic ballot where Democrats were trending better. But through the shutdown, it has progressed. And as Trump's policies progress, you can look at it in the disapproval numbers for specific issues. As that has grown, you have seen Republican chances in the midterms drop. And, you know, this is part of it. It's like, you know, OK, there's all this drama. That's all well and good.
The property value of the compound. Yes.
Yes. All these things. But I don't care about the drama here. The problem is that, like, even this casual misstatement of fact about the Republicans' opportunities in the midterm is indicative of this entire world that they have built. Like, I honestly cannot quite. Follow what is going on here. Here's Mike Cernovich complaining. Republicans in Congress have decided to toss the midterms. They want to lose their House and Senate majorities. Then Trump can be impeached again. This will create baggage for J.D. Vance and allow the chicken hawk warmonger establishment to take power back and do amnesty. And then Benny Johnson says this is exactly what's happened. A coordinated attempt to rip the MAGA base from the inside. Okay, this is relevant because look, apparently, Tim Pool thinks that he is being attacked, like literally, because he is pushing back on Candace Owens. He is saying that he's getting texts from other conservative talkers that they're afraid to take on Candace Owens. Meanwhile, you see Benny Johnson and Mike Cernovich spinning this new conspiracy theory. My point being is that all of these conspiracies that they live in,
yep,
all of this sort of like fictionalizing of reality. January 6th was just a tour, and then it was just Patriots, and then it was just boomers, and it was just whatever. All of this, like the we're going to have a civil war. They're saying this like a year ago.
Trump might win 49 out of 50 states in 2020.
And that at least is
saying.
Like just a bad prediction.
Fair
I'm just
enough.
Talking about all of the this entire, you know, like we're going to bring InfoWars guys onto the show.
The
and
alternate
platform.
Reality they live in.
They,
yeah.
Like they invented this genre.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, going back to the John Birch Society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's certainly like you can find pockets of it across all ideologies, but the entire conservative, as he says, movement, their infotainment complex has trafficked in so many different conspiracy theories that there's literally like a war between conspiracy theories that are going on. Like, you know, I can barely follow it. And,
yeah.
And so, and then the one shred of like relevant material he gets, it's completely wrong.
Right.
I mean, like, just you can look at the numbers and you can see this. And so they have built an entire house of sand.
Yes. And it's also on the, in a way that tries to absolve Trump and appeases the cult of personality that has populated their audience. You notice that. Even Tucker Carlson won't take really direct shots at Trump. It's always some sort of subversion, or they'll look at an underling like Kash Patel or Pam Bondi. It's always someone that is hurting him internally, or there's a conspiracy internally within the party that's going to hurt their chances. And so it's exactly what you're saying, but it's also immensely cowardly and there to satiate the base that they have cultivated, because they are all a part of the cult as well.
And you talk about, you know, Tucker Carlson. People forget this. When he left Fox, he rebuilt his audience by talking about how he was attacked by a demon in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Who and woke up the next morning with scratches all over him because this devil figure that is like akin to like, what was it? Like Saul and I just watched it. Oh, yeah, no, Stranger Things. Like one of those, like,
yeah.
What are those called? Gordon?
I
can't remember.
Show.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a kid's show. But I mean, this is their entire. You know, like even just Cernovich right here, just talking
about. Can you
about,
put
like,
that back up, please? Like, I want to see the Cernovich thing.
All,
yeah.
It's all just about coming up with crazy ass conspiracy theories that provide sort of like pre-digested answers, ones where you need to know nothing,
mm-hmm.
where it's all just like these fictional stories. And now it is eating itself. It is like watching the snake eat its own tail.
Yeah, and it's so disconnected from reality or anything material that they can't even address what's happening with the policies or the fact that the Republicans are presiding over one of the biggest transfers of wealth in one bill, with the one big-ass, ugly-ass bill that's about to hit. The fact that they're kicking tens of millions of people off of their health care, whether it be the ACA subsidies expiring, allowing that to happen, or whether it be the gutting of Medicaid, and hurting Medicare as well. They can't even address the substance of it because they're living in a parallel universe. It's like what Naomi Klein spoke about with Mirror World. They are in their own ecosystem.
If we had a Democratic president, a Democratic Senate, and a Democratic House,
yes,
this show would be every day the driest MFR show that you could imagine, where we would be talking about different.
That was 2021.
This show has been that for probably a decade, you know, at various times. But when they get power, they can't do anything because there's no policies behind it. Like, their agenda has nothing to do with making the country better in a way that provides any type of material support for the greatest number of people. It all becomes a culture war that you can only talk about so much. You can only talk about the lies about, like, you know, trans people ruining women's sports and taking over and changing it, and gender stuff. You can only talk about this so much until people go like, we get it already. And then they have to just start like spinning these conspiracy theories, weather machines. And that's the way, like, it's the way that Marjorie Taylor Greene made her name for herself and became the biggest fundraiser there. And then ultimately it just ate her too, because, and she had to jump out, InfoWars. And then it just keeps spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning until they decide to get off, like Milo Yiannopoulos on some level.
And that's why they're mad at Candace Owens. And just to bring it back to, wow, he really dropped the hard C word with the T at the end, which is in the UK, maybe that's all right to say, but that's pretty harsh words for a woman. And I know that he enjoyed that. But that's why they are upset about Candace Owens. And he's saying like, oh, she doesn't have a stake in this or whatever. She just has one fat guy. She's not really worried about her safety, whatever. The fact that she's being critical of both the Republican Party, I mean, with her anti-Jewish hatred that also sometimes like sounds like anti-Zionism, but also her critiques of the rest of the media ecosystem, it's bothering them deeply, because it's like, aren't we supposed to be all on the same team? But with the Republican administration being this unpopular, someone's going to break off. And she did.
And if you look at like what creates fractures within sort of like our, you know, sort of like ecosystem, it is always like policy or some type of like, strategy or, you know, is it incrementalism? This is like, they're just talking about like these bizarre conspiracy theories that range from, and look, we have this vacuum of information that the killer was supposedly arrested 3 months ago. And then all of a sudden everybody went radio silent when it became clear that they couldn't make, you know, sort of like anti-trans hay out of this, or anti-liberal hay out of it. And then they were just left with like, oh, okay, now what do we do? And they're all in some type of grifty business. And it was just the first person who went there.
I mean, Cernovich can't even be honest with himself when he says, allow the chicken hawk warmonger establishment to take power back. Like, they bombed Iran and they're trying to go to war with Venezuela. They're fine. But Alex Perrine had this great piece, 2017, The Long Lucrative Right-Wing Grift is Blowing Up in the World's Face. It says, you don't need to understand the GOP. You don't need to understand the alt-right. You pretty much just need to be in semi-regular contact with a white, reasonably comfortable male retiree. We are now ruled by men who think and act very much like that ordinary man you might know. And if you want to know why they believe so many strange and terrible things, you can basically blame the fact that a large and lucrative industry is dedicated to lying to them.
Yeah.
And I would just recommend that piece, because it is just like basically the lunatics took over the asylum.
And now like the lunatics that they have promoted are now like attacking them, because this is like some type of like literal internecine war amongst them. Meanwhile, you got like Nick Fuentes is now sort of like, you know, trying to mainstream himself, and he's, agreeing with Tim Pool, and it's all just sort of like in this weird milieu. And we're just watching, like, literally, it's like, on some level, like, I don't even want to like talk about it, because there's a certain amount of like TMZ quality to this.
Yeah.
But it also, here's the thing. All of these people were intricately and intimately involved in getting Donald Trump into office and promoting these lies and creating this ecosystem. And it is fascinating, but also materially relevant into what's going on down, with all of this stuff. Who knows?
Exactly.
I don't know if there's any more that's relevant. Let's just play a little bit, but then I want to get to this other part.
Liked Charlie, she loved Charlie, and she is burning everything down that he built, because she is evil. She is evil. And I'll say it again, this conservative movement is fractured, it's fried, whatever it is. Okay? Republicans are on track to lose the midterms. They were actually trending in the other direction until Charlie Kirk was murdered.
That's not true.
And this is the point, isn't it? The most effective political assassination in history. And thanks to the likes of the vile cunt Candace Owens, she has turned Turning Point into the perpetrators of the crime that was against them. I don't get paid by any of these people. I'm not on good terms necessarily with Turning Point USA. They didn't invite me to their stupid event. I don't want to go.
Oh, my God.
They invited me back after I started criticizing Candace. I'm not going to your event. I'm over all of this shit. The last thing that I need to deal with is a bunch of cowards and conservative media refusing to stand up to her. Megyn Kelly, come on. I appreciate the kind words, but come on. Such fucking pathetic bullshit. You know, and I get people saying, Tim, you know, thank you so much for talking about it. I don't care.
See, this is what's so fascinating. I'm not doing a favor for anybody. Like, what he's revealing here is that all of them, they don't speak any truth to power whatsoever.
No, they're cowards.
They're afraid. Like, and they're all, like, they've all apparently been texting Tim saying, thank you for saying something. I'm too afraid to do it. Megyn Kelly has a huge platform. They all have huge platforms, but they also realize that they have created monsters, that their audience are full of deluded monsters, and they don't want to get on the wrong side of it. So they won't disavow them of their crazy beliefs because they don't feel like it's that their job. It's their job to surf on top of those deluded beliefs.
That's what Marjorie Taylor Greene said, the same thing, that everybody trashes Trump behind his back, but nobody will come out and say
exactly.
It.
Yeah. The whole edifice is built in that way. The whole edifice is built on that way. And
the fact that Charlie Kirk is at the center of it really just lays bare how deeply cynical it all is. I mean, when they couldn't unite around a conspiracy theory about the death of their colleague and monetize that effectively, they have fractured internally within like their own industry. This is not about the midterms. So like, let's separate their little war between each other from the fact that the Republicans are harming the economy and hurting people, immiserating them. Right. This is a separate thing. But it is interesting how you're seeing that play out.
The American public doesn't care about what's going on right here with these things. I mean, their audiences do. These people can be effective in helping. Now they're just simply an absence of helping. And that's a problem because the Republican policies are very have a bad effect on people. And in the absence of like more lies being spun to sort of support it. But all of this has been like, look, even the central aspect about Charlie Kirk, he was lauded as a free speech warrior. And no one ever pointed out that his organization was built upon and continued to blacklist professors in college universities, to literally shut down free speech. Like, that was the fundamental building block of TPUSA. They had college chapters, and the primary function of those college chapters when it was founded was to report on professors. Like, the entire edifice was built on anti-free speech, and yet they lauded this guy as a free speech warrior because he would go back to those same colleges and debate college kids in public.
Yeah.
And the fundamental contradiction there fell apart. And so it was interesting. And people are saying, you know, this is the first time Tim has ever sounded genuine to me. Yeah, he's legitimately angry. I think part of it is also, there was another clip I saw where he said, like, they're having to spend money on security. And, you know, when I was there a year ago, it was almost to the day, Tim had like made major cutbacks on staffing because I think they had overextended themselves with that Russian money. So who knows?
Mm. Moonlord's going to have to be the bodyguard.
But, you know, the drama is the drama. They can have fun with it. But what's really important is it's very, very telling because their entire apparatus in many ways reflects what has always been the MO of the Republican Party, even going back to Paul Ryan. And Paul Ryan would talk about, like, you know, he had a fake story that he said was his that actually came from another person in Wisconsin, another like a state official, about a poor kid who didn't want to have a free lunch at school. He wanted a brown bag lunch. And it was a fake story just to build up the idea that if you are poor or some way, or you rely on a free lunch, you don't have the same moral righteousness as someone who gets their own lunch. And that ideology is exactly why you got Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump gets on stage, and if you are morally unrighteous because you are poor, you are the most morally righteous
Absolutely.
If you are rich.
He's the prosperity gospel president. So he sits on that stage. President.
Exactly.
Yep.
And he's like, I'm a billionaire, so everything you say is wrong.
Yeah.
Because I have more money than you.
Jennifer Welch just talked about this, about how he's basically a televangelist. She said this when she came on with me, and how his base of support is like a lot of evangelicals who already have that kind of framework in mind for somebody to admire, and they will willingly give their hard-earned money and donate to these people, regardless of the fact that it's quite clear that these are scams. And Trump fits that archetype perfectly.
It was like Mesmer. The Mesmer who enjoyed this guy's snake oil salesman because they thought they were in on the side that was on the side of lying toward, away from.
Yep. In on a joke.
Yep.
Too much winning. We can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
That must have been from years ago.
That was 2016.
It sounds so much more energetic.
That's one of these, you're going to be tired of winning, Jag. And yeah. That was actually true for all these people. Like, they would be in such a better place professionally if he had lost the election last year.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They can be a victim.
Yep.
Yeah. What is this clip?
This is a quick one.
It's a tech guy being normal.
Oh, okay. Jimmy Fallon had on Sam Altman of OpenAI fame.
Well, it'd be hard-hitting, right? He'll probably talk about how AI data centers are driving up electricity costs for people around the country and using so much water.
Mysterious whistleblower deaths.
Yes, and that basically they're racing to get ahead of regulators because they know that this is going to be contributing to people's high electricity, as I mentioned, but also major climate disasters. They're using coal and gas and burning it all up.
No, they're going to smash eggs on each other's foreheads while sitting.
Okay. Which laboo-boo are you?
Use of AI has flatlined in the business world.
Yeah.
It really, all it's been effective at doing is maybe losing some jobs for some people. Again, a productivity gain, which will go only to the wealthiest people.
Yeah.
And let's see if Jimmy Fallon shakes his hair.
And do you use ChatGPT when raising your baby?
I do. I mean, I feel kind of bad about it because we have this, like, genius level at everything, intelligence, sitting there, like, waiting to unravel the mysteries of humanity. And I'm like, why does my kid stop dropping his pizza on the floor and laughing? Like,
yeah.
You know? And so I feel like I'm not asking a good enough question, but it is, I cannot imagine having gone through that, like, figuring out how to raise a newborn without ChatGPT. Clearly, people did it for a long time, no problem.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
So I know, it, like, did, it's clear.
Doesn't Jimmy's, like, lead into that question remind you of an infomercial where they're like, so tell me how these knives cut? Like,
QVC or NBC?
Yeah. Do you use ChatGPT while raising your child?
Yes. And you can get ChatGPT in a variety of different colors. We got pink.
How many nannies do you think he has working for his one child?
I bet he can't even answer that question.
He probably has nannies who subcontract to other nannies.
Has there ever been a more obvious PR-driven push to get somebody to sound more relatable? Hey, you know, this technology that's, like, being sold as something that could be also the death of humanity, which is also helpful, I think, to these investors, because it makes it sound more powerful than it is. Maybe you just frame it as, like, something that's incredibly helpful to raise your kid. It's like a friend. But that is the plot of that movie that came out, that satirical Megan. It's literally the plot of Megan, which was, you know, it's like a comedy horror, sort of horror film. It was really funny.
It was good.
But yeah, with the doll that is raising the kid, who of course, like, you know, takes that too seriously, basically. But that's what this is.
Well, he's also trying to give a permission structure for people to use it for banal things.
Right.
Well, and they love to talk about stuff like that, because you just talked about it as like, this is going to make all of us a lot of money. It's not that nice. That has to be implicit. So even like when it was NFTs and stuff, it's like, all this crypto stuff, it can actually help the unbanked in third world countries.
Right.
It's like you don't give a shit about any of that. But this is actually a Jimmy Fallon special, because a few years ago, this was January 24th, 2022, so about a few months before.
By the way, Colbert's getting canceled, and this guy's still kicking.
But watch, this is one of the most amazing sort of, in the same sort of thing of Jimmy Fallon sort of does marketing for a tech scam. Here's him with Paris Hilton.
But since then, Forbes has named you one of the 50 most influential people in the NFT space. So congrats on that.
Thank you.
What you're doing.
Thank you. I'm so proud. I love being a part of this community and being a voice and sharing my platform and just getting the word out there, because I think it's just such an incredible thing to be a part of.
Yeah, I jumped in.
I know. I heard. I'm so happy I taught you what they were.
You did. You taught me what's up, and then I bought an ape.
I got an ape too, because I saw you on the show with Beeple and you said you got a MoonPay, so I went and I copied you and did the same thing.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
This is your ape.
Yeah, we debuted. It's really cool. The hat, the shades.
Now what? How did you pick? Because you can pick your ape.
I'll tell you something. If you told me this was a clip of a movie of like, you know, some like weird sci-fi Black Mirror movie in the future, I would be like, this is pretty good. They did this well.
Yeah.
Like, it really, that is
dystopian.
Oh my God.
Let's just play this next part where he asks her, how did he choose this monkey? I think her response comes from the heart, and then we can
do that. Okay, good.
Now, how did you pick? Because you can pick your ape.
Yes, I was going through a lot of them, and I was like, I want something that like kind of reminds me of me, but this one, it does. I think we made like another version of it where he takes the hat off and blonde hair comes out.
Yeah, because you can do it now, whatever you want.
Mm-hmm, animated version.
We're part of the same community. We're both
community. They're part of the same community.
We both spent thousands of dollars on a cartoon ape.
Do you think he literally means a community, a gated community in Los Angeles?
That is amazing. That is amazing. I honestly, like, they're talking about, like, it's...
He must just go back to his green room and just
Beeple.
Cut himself.
I saw your ape on Beeple. Something.
I think,
Yeah, a little bit, like, more like that. Yeah.
Use MoonPay.
Well, folks.
They say.
Part of the same community.
The Epstein Ballroom, Idiocracy meets Dazed and Confused.
Yeah.
All right, couple more of these IMs and then we got to wrap things up. Your boy Blue, remember, now is not the time for primaries. Meanwhile, Senate Democrats are out there fighting the good fight, making sure Trump can't put his face on our currency. Bluestone, the creator of Netflix, may be a tad more left, but he is also a network state guy along with Reid Hoffman. No one wins with either merger. We have to, why even have antitrust if we're going to consolidate everything?
Yeah, I'll just comment on the no primaries thing. I think that's probably a shot at Zohran. I think you can go one way, either way on the, you know, wanting to primary Jeffries with DSA knocking doors on it. But I also think, like, he's the mayor of New York, and everybody who wants him to forego that responsibility and then just try to primary Congress, it seems a little bit like you're creating a...
It's stupid.
Yeah, it's stupid.
I imagine that there is a world where Mamdani can be mayor and have the resources and not expend the resources to challenge Jeffries. Maybe that's second term or whatnot. But the equation is this. What is the most helpful thing for the movement? Is it Jeffries losing his speakership, losing his race, And then, I don't know, Catherine Clark becoming speaker or something like that. Or Mamdani fulfilling his promises that he's made. I think it's quite obvious that it's Mamdani filling his promises that he made are the most important thing to happen. Because if Mamdani fails, that is going to be the story for years to come.
Yep.
And now people can argue with Mamdani and say, like, you could have done both. And okay, make the argument.
Well,
because
they didn't. DSA didn't agree, and they voted on it.
Right.
So now it's
DSA
over.
Already exactly. voted. Exactly. DSA voted. I mean, people can have opinions from the outside, but
join
at the
DSA.
End of the day, DSA made their decision. And I think, you know, it was easier to see this coming, I think, in the months leading up, because AOC has also been more supportive of Jeffries than you would maybe anticipate, given his ideology or, I mean, lack of effectiveness. It appears that the House Democratic Caucus has, like, a better opinion of him than, I don't know, we probably understand.
Or he's just not a priority for attack right now because maybe, you
well,
know,
it's just
you
a
can't
question
do
of,
it.
You have a limited amount of resources.
Right.
Where are you going to expend them? You
right.
either make sure you take him out and hope that whoever replaces him is more amenable to moving left. And you have to know this stuff. Or you focus on building your power. And the primary way that you're going to build your power is by being successful.
Right. And in terms of the timing of it, too, the months leading up to the primaries in New York are going to be literally the most key months that Zohran has. It's going to be the first 6 months of his mayoralty, right? Because he takes office at the beginning of January. So leading up to a June primary, those are he.
That's
his,
it.
That's it. That's his agenda. That's it. And it's the same. And it's also he's going to need to be focusing on pressuring Kathy Hochul in that time period. So you can't wage war on all those fronts.
Well, it's also he doesn't want someone who is the Speaker of the House who brings all the goodies to
exactly.
all the Congress people in New York State to be against him.
Exactly.
Actively working against him.
And it's the same reason that he didn't replace Tisch as the police commissioner, despite the fact that the NYPD was horrific to the pro-Palestine protesters at Columbia, for example. He's banking that he'll be able to keep her in line, and he doesn't want to wage a war against the NYPD while he's trying to enact his agenda.
At least immediately.
Okay, five more of these. Kentucky leftist. I know I'm not the only one who noticed Emma called MR my show. She ain't wrong.
What was I supposed to say? Our show? Sam Cedar's show.
Me and Neera's show.
Right. My girl.
Got real estate. I am a real estate professional, and this story is appalling. FYI, sadly, I'm one of the few in my profession that believes housing is a human right.
Need more of you.
It's mine. There's a glitch on the Android app. Listen now. Always plays for a few seconds, then stops, goes silent, and starts playing again after a few seconds. Took me a year to figure it out. I just restart and give up after a couple of times. Send an email to our help desk on the app and tell them what version of Android you have and what hardware. Nassau County spokesperson. Coincidentally enough, Hochul just got 1.5 GW from the public utility proposal. Gabby, gigabiologist, if you want to sail the sea and avoid paying for any streaming service, search for the Reddit piracy mega thread. What's so funny about that?
It's just funny, 2025. Like, it's just readily available on Reddit.
Two more. Ramona Frankenstein. Hey, I'm Mark Rue. Just wanted to let you know that I was asked by some people to clip my call last week, and it has gone a bit viral on NH Talk.
Ooh.
Thank you guys for the numbers, and thank you for allowing me to platform to discuss New Hampshire politics. It means a lot. Also, Emma, not only did you crush it on CNN last night, but goddamn, you were serving face and hair. Honestly, queen shit. Stay winning, girly.
They did that for me, so thanks to the makeup and hair people there.
And the final I am of the day. Co-star, NFT punks, F off. Matt, Brian, Emma, great job today. Folks, see you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Yeah, I know the clock is